This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Welcome back. It's another edition of Hashtag Politrix with Botsang Modimoame Muilwa. He deals with subject matters that can be just as difficult to figure out as a minister discussing the use of open circle gas turbines. However, we like to think that his interpretations are far more clearer. Please welcome back our Politrix person, Botsang Modimoame Muilwa. Botsang, welcome back.
Good morning, Brother Fresh.
Thank I see your image consultant is very, very busy.
Doing a good job.
He's doing a very good job.
The response has been very good from the followers as well, except one or two said, no, I must bring back the uncombed hair.
No, you must tell them you're getting ready to go back to work.
And by the way, bro, I am. Honestly, I know that I am.
No, I know that.
I am getting ready to go back to work.
And how do you feel about that?
Well, I feel good. I think it's been time, man. It's been 3 years I'm sitting at home.
Yeah.
And I think it's about time for me to go back to it.
About one only clean.
Yeah. No. My father used to say, I must never look my problems.
That is so true.
When you are broke and you have problems, you must dress up and keep your head up and chin up and walk straight.
Absolutely.
So I'm bringing that old lesson into my life now.
Or as they say to girls, keep your crown on, queen.
Exactly.
Exactly. Anyway, NHI is here.
Yes, Baba.
Is it premature? Is it an election ploy? What is going on?
Look,
I'm even hearing a conspiracy that says NHI is being signed into law now so that when the coalitions come and mess it up, they can say, you see, the coalitions messed up NHI.
Look. That could be the strategy, but one, we know that the NHI, which has been signed into law act this past week by the president, it has been on the pipeline for a number of years. It has been up and down. It went through the National Council of Provinces as required. It went through the National Assembly, and the ruling ANC used their two-thirds majority in parliament to can pass the bill.
Sure.
But in my view, Fresh, do we need an NHI? Yes, as a nation.
Sure.
It's a good policy. It has good intention. It is well aligned to the, Section 47 of the Constitution, you understand, for rights to health care, rights to education and things like that. But I think it is premature. And it is going to be funded from, from our taxes, the general tax.
Sure.
There's some employment category, depending on the, there's a figure that's going to be decided on the employed people, that a certain percentage of employed people who are earning salaries, a certain percentage will go towards the contribution of the NHI. Look, it's like any other medical insurance scheme. But the intention is good, as I've said so, but I think it's very premature. One, I don't think the nation is ready. And look, it also worries me
politically. But is it not supposed to be implemented incrementally and staggered?
On phases. Well, that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But signing something into law when there is so much row and opposition towards it, it's a problem on its own.
Mm.
We know, I don't want to talk about the DA. The DA opposes everything that the ANC tables.
Sure.
Even if it's things that are in their own manifestos, as long as it comes to the ANC, they are doing their job as opposition. But it's not only the DA. I'm talking about experts, financial experts, as well. The country
isn't
that. The unions, nursing. I was listening to an interview of some president of Hutai, some nursing union, and they were saying this is not going to work because I looked at the requirements also to say, for example, public facilities, it's not all the facilities in the country. That's one thing that people are missing. I read the booklet. It's not all. They said it's facilities that meets the requirements that are set out on the NHI. And the public facilities are said they should be upgraded to be able to meet the standard. Now, if we failed to upgrade the public facilities for a common purpose, why would we be able to upgrade them now
Yeah, what magic pill
all of a sudden? What magic, yes, all of a sudden.
What new managers all of a sudden are these hospitals going to have?
Exactly.
That are going to lead.
For them to be accepted. So it's also segregatory because it says you have to meet a certain category. We know that hospitals and clinics in townships, in rural areas, will never in this lifetime meet those categories to be at par with, for example, Santin Mediclinic.
So does this mean then that the private facilities are going to become burdened?
Look, there will be a burden because one of what this act is doing, because it becomes a law. Remember, all these medical aid schemes or insurances, they report or they are managed not only by the Financial Services Board, but also indirectly by the Minister of Health.
Sure.
So private facilities will be forced to accept patients who come with this, who have registered on an NHI. And some people are afraid that they will be packed with people, it will drop the standard of medical facilities. For me, equal a health system for everybody in the country. I accept that. But are we ready as a nation? Do we have the money? Do we have the finances?
Sure.
Do we have the expertise of people who are going to be managing these funds? And I think we are putting the cart before the horse. You understand? Right now,
so
I think they are rushing as an election thing. You know, the ANC has the strategy. Remember when President Zuma was leaving office?
Yeah, he dropped the mic
on education.
As he walked out of Nasrec.
Yes.
He dropped the bomb and walked off.
Exactly.
Free education for all.
Exactly. And I think that's what President Ramaphosa is doing.
Yeah.
The timing is also very important.
Sure.
Almost every political party that the ruling ANC will need after elections to govern, to co-govern with, or to cooperate, let's say they even win, but to cooperate with, are against the way this NHI is being, tabled and presented.
So had we by some miracle managed to fix public health first, then it would make sense, right?
It would be a big step.
For instance, I've got a friend in Norway. We've been friends for the past, 40 years, 35 years, and he doesn't have medical aid because he doesn't need it.
In countries where it works.
He doesn't subscribe to ADT because he doesn't need it. And we were just comparing private services that I am paying for myself because we met over December.
Okay.
And we hadn't spoken in a while. And now that we're adult, we're having adult conversation.
Yes.
And we're talking about the fact that, for instance, because of the state of our healthcare, I must get medical aid.
Yeah.
And it costs X amount. Because of the state of generally, not all public schools are subpar, but generally because of that, my kids must go to a private school.
Yeah.
Likewise, security.
And he's not paying for that.
He's paying for none of that.
Yeah.
So for him, he's like, oh, you're paying for security, you're paying for medical aid, you're paying for education. Oh, my kids are getting all of that through.
And somebody may say, why is Fresh comparing South Africa with Norway? Norway is a fast developed country. It's a region. Even if we use countries like Brazil, where we are at par.
Sure.
I mean, for example, next door, I was telling people, next door in Mozambique, they've got the same national health insurance system, although their facilities are not, but they have the system. It has been working very well to some greater extent, you understand? That's why you don't find many Mozambicans coming to South Africa for health services. You may find Zimbabweans, Basotho, and Eswatini, but Mozambicans, not many. And countries like Brazil, which are at par with us in terms of economic growth and a developing country, they have the same system, whether it's education or health. It's a good intention, it's a good policy, it needs to be tweaked, it needs to be rolled out. And the funding, you know, first I was calculating, you know, on our GDP or our revenue as a country, 33% of this nation's revenue, it's salaries of public servants. Okay, 33%. Approximately 28% of that revenue of the country, it's foreign debt. So over 50% of our revenue as a nation is consumed by salaries of public servants and a foreign debt. We are left with 43% to can do all of these things. And now everybody's going to contribute through the general tax, but some are going to contribute double, general tax as well as your income. Some people are going to contribute double. You know what's going to happen? people who have medical aid like you are going to say, but I don't need to be paying 4,000 or 5,000 rands for me and my kids towards medical aid every month. I can go and sign up with NHI because it doesn't discriminate. That's another issue about it. It doesn't discriminate between low or high income earners. It doesn't discriminate between employed or unemployed. It's for everybody.
Sure. So what of medical aids then? Are they going to collapse?
Well, no. Medical aids are up in arms. Momentum was one of the first companies to react to this. Let me tell you, the mistake we did as a nation was to allow medical insurance, what used to be called medical aid, to become financial services providers. They are FSPs.
Yes.
You know, they are like banks now. So this is one thing also that the government or political officer or lawmakers didn't apply their mind to. You cannot force medical insurances to now come and comply solely on political grounds. Because now they are governed by another law as well. They are service providers. Again, Fresh, what happens to right of admission? You know, basic things that I think politicians didn't put their mind on. There is something called right of admission. You have a hospital that is a private entity built by private investors, just like a mall. You understand? And the owners of that hospital, in my view, and in terms of the laws and the constitution of this country, can sit and say, we do not accept such and such patient to come to our to our facility. You have the right to refuse right of admission. Somebody will say, but then it is against the constitution. But that's not a public place. It's a private place. And if it's against the constitution, that's where the Democratic Alliance comes in and say they are prepared to go right up to the constitutional court. Look, I don't think the act will be implemented or rolled out immediately for one reason. If there's already a constitutional question on it, and we know how long it will take. And we also know that in this country, it has happened that the Concord has sent back and signed off act to parliament to say, lawmakers in parliament, you didn't apply your minds properly, and therefore we should try and go and retweak and change this thing. A good plan that needs good administrators, that needs good governance, that needs a non-corrupt country, non-corrupt politicians who are going to be administrators of that. And we know what these politicians are doing. Once they put their hands into that cookie jar, forget this NHI. Fresh, we have had very good policies. Look at SASA, look at the NEFSAS. Understand? Most of the things that goes wrong in SASA and NEFSAS and all other grants of government, it is because of corruption, not because it's bad policies. And we are failing to manage corruption as a nation. In a sense, the ANC-led government has failed to manage and curb corruption in the public service. What will make this different? I mean, I was laughing yesterday. I wrote a piece regarding there was a robbery, for example, a police nyala carrying R5 rifles was robbed, and all those rifles are gone. All of them. We have over thousands of rifles in the streets.
There'll be a cash in transit heist soon. So
exactly.
They're not totally gone.
And a friend of mine from KZN heist human said, you know, but I was thinking about what you wrote. I've just been passed by, I counted 12 vehicles accompanying either the president or the deputy president. And they were carrying R5 rifles. Now you escort one person with 12 vehicles and you fail in a crime ridden country and province. You fail to escort a vehicle that is carrying rifles. You can see that our decision making and security is misplaced. And you know, but let's see how it goes. But see a battle.
Or maybe they know something we don't. That's why they don't feel safe.
Oh, the politicians. Yeah, I wouldn't feel safe if I'm them. If I steal from people and mislead people and lie to people perpetually, and I live well, you know, and people are living in poverty and squalor, I'll be worried about my life. But if they were doing their job, if they were in touch with reality, if they were sitting with people on the ground, and again, I blame us as voters and South Africans that we elect people into positions who are aloof, who are not living with us in reality. Understand? And I think the problem also doesn't lie with these people. It lies with us who put them in those positions.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the Border Management Authority, 400 new officers.
Yes, that's one of the highlights of this week as well. The Border Management Authority has released, in the parade, I call it the graduation of law enforcers.
Yes.
Additional 400 junior border guards. It has been received with criticism. Remember, the Border Management Authority was officially came into operation last year, August.
Sure.
And they started with 200 border guards. Mm. Now they've increased them. They send them for training. What I appreciate with the Border Management Authority or the border guards is that they are not trained normally. They have a sort of a SWAT kind of combo training.
Ah.
They are trained like the soldiers, like policemen, like traffic officials,
okay,
as well as border officials in terms of immigration and customs.
But can they fight a crocodile?
Look, you have agricultural experts in border guards as well.
Yes.
They are not supposed to be fighting. Crocodile is a transporter in this instance, the naughty part you are bringing up. But they've got fun. People are lamenting to say, what is 400 when the borders of the country are porous?
Mm.
But again, guys, we don't do anything as a nation, or the government doesn't do anything, we complain.
Mm.
They do something, we still complain.
It's not enough.
It's not enough. Mm. But again, thumbs up to the Border Management Authority for training people. They don't just go for crash course training,
sure,
because
they are
armed guards. That's another thing. They are armed law enforcers.
Mm.
They've got the same level as the military as well as the police.
Sure.
So they get trained at the RTMC, the Road Traffic Management Corporation training center in Pretoria West. They get engaged with South African Police Service. They get engaged with South African Army because they're going to be working with the army along the border lines and so forth. So I think it's a step in the right direction. And really, their hands are tied by the budget. If there is no budget, you can't recruit more people.
Absolutely.
So I think it's also for the Treasury to can make funds available today for the BMA to can increase the number of border guards that we need.
Mm.
And I think the policy that they adopted to rotate them. You know, when you put somebody in one station.
In fact, it's weird because I do a lot of driving between here and Botswana.
Yes.
And jiggy, one day I get there and I don't see a face I recognize at the border.
Yeah.
I was like, God, they've probably been rotated.
Yeah, I must, the guy you used to bribe is no longer there to smile with.
No, man. And for instance, there's, I think one of the managers is a Xhosa agent. Because I've only heard Setswana at the border.
Yeah.
So as I'm getting my passport checked, I'm hearing some deep Xhosa coming from a corner there. I was like, oh, they've rotated staff.
Yeah, you know, Fresh, I think it's a good thing. And I must actually take credit for that. One of the things that we did when we engaged the Canadians to copy their model in doing this, one of the things I learned in border management is that one of the problems with law enforcement in the world is to have the same person stationed.
Familiarity.
Yes, you get used to this person.
Yes.
And this person, you know, they make that border or that station the Alpha and the Omega.
Sure.
Rotate them, move them around, move them to different places at all times. That's part of a control measure that the BMA has put into place.
Mm.
And I think it's, look, we, as a nation where we do good, we must actually applaud the government. And I think it's a step in the right direction. And like I said, I personally know that they are constrained financially.
Mm.
If we can increase the budget of that entity, law enforcement entity, and then they will do a better job.
Mm.
But again, these two important bills and acts that has happened in the country this week regarding the NHI and the BMA, it shows that the government is at work.
Absolutely.
Whether we like it or not, but there is work being done.
Speaking government at work, technical, I don't know what's happening with the screen here, but the screen is dead. So can you guys make like government and work? Thank you very much. Anyway, 30 years of democracy. What are your thoughts? What are your...
Look, I'll team that up with what you call it, with the election, what is happening in the country and so forth.
Yes,
but first, in reflection on that, what are we now? We are less than 2 weeks to elections.
Mm.
And we look at 30 years of democracy in South Africa. And if one had to put a 10 point, I would say as a nation, we have done out of 10, I will score ourselves 6.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. A basic human rights have improved a lot. Obviously, there was transition. And unfortunately, we cannot, as a nation, compare the current ANC government, led ANC led government with any other. We can't compare it with the apartheid. I've heard people saying, this was better during apartheid. No, I wouldn't do that. I'm one of the people who will refuse people to accept that things were better and better how and for who. You had 7 million white people. Being superior, being led by, restrictive laws.
And benefiting from the cream of everything.
Exactly, you understand? But there's things that I take from the leaf of the African government, especially from the formation of the National Party coming up in 1948 to 1994. When things were bad for South Africa, they had visionary leaders.
Sure.
They, for them, the establishment of ESCOM, of SASOL, of ISCO, and the forming of conglomerates.
There was a plan, there was a self-sufficiency plan.
There was self-sufficiency
plan. Because they knew that the world would be against them.
Exactly.
And there's no reason why we should stop wanting to be self-sufficient.
Exactly, that's what we should
do. Stop industrializing.
Plan industrializing. I mean, look at what they did with ISCO. Look also in the financial market, how they created the Sanlams.
Sure.
As well as what is known as APSA today, when they formed banks like
Volkskas
and the others. That became the amalgamated banks. They had a plan. They had a vision. It was a selfish plan for a tiny minority. But why wouldn't we as a nation rise and have plans, long-term plans? I should not worry about me being my birthday week this week. I'm left with 3 years to live. I must worry about the next 30 years, where will the country be? What will the kids? I don't want my kids to go through what I went through in life.
Sure.
And I think it needs people with vision. It needs planners.
Sure.
And for planners, not people who think here, selfishly. And I think, we have done well as a country. Yes, there are problems. There's a problem of the normal three: unemployment, health services, corruption, and crime. South Africa is a crime capital of the world. We are a crime-ridden society, and I don't think we are winning that battle. I think the government can start very minting funds from areas that are stable. And move funds to areas that are serious, social ills, criminal activities. Our education and health, they are not where they are supposed to be, but there's been work being done there. I want to see the country moving into a much more safer. When the country is safer, you spoke earlier on about the money you spent on your electric fence, on your ADT or whatever company security. Even private people are having bulletproof cars at the moment. Imagine if that money is put back into the society, reinvested, how much it will do if I didn't have to pay, all those additional things.
What do you say to people who say a lot of our social ills are directly a link to the abolition of corporal punishment, and that now we are raising 30 years of kids that don't know consequences. We are raising 30 years of kids that pretty much get away with what the hell they want to because there's no corporal punishment.
Yeah, look, spiritually or religiously, I'm against
as a
Buddhist, I'm against capital punishment.
But as a gun collector,
I don't collect guns to kill people. I collect them as toys.
But in the event that you needed
to use it, I will use it.
An uncorporally punished, badly raised, lawless 2000.
A criminal. If my life is threatened, I will use my firearm.
So you wouldn't namaste them or anything?
No. I'm not going to pull a Dalai Lama on a criminal. That will not happen. I live in the real world, which is controversial. But historically, knowingly, and looking at the facts, and I'm glad you are raising that question because I heard somebody on the radio the other day saying there is capital punishment in South Africa. Unfortunately, it is administered and enforced by criminals.
Yes.
Criminals are killing people.
Absolutely.
You understand? Yeah. It's there. Every day, people, 18 people are killed in South Africa every day, according to the official statistics.
And in any other democracy, That's a crisis.
It's crisis. No. That's a crisis. A serious crisis. Now, you ask me, what is my view to those people? I think I'm at a stage where I'm saying, let us go on a referendum. Let the people decide whether they want capital punishment or not. For us, as academics, learners, lawyers, to sit here and say it will not work.
No, but my thing is, even just at a corporal punishment level, the fact that you can't even teach a kid a thing or two
I can't even slap my child these days. I will sleep in police cells.
Yeah, but you mustn't slap a child. Maybe a cane.
Slap a cane. What's the difference?
No, mpama is very abusive. A cane is very, disciplinary.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Gosh, there's no difference.
That's why even at schools, you were given six of the best.
Yeah.
By ma'am or.
But you can't do that anymore.
But you never got mpama.
Yeah, but you can't even give that six of the best anymore in this country.
And for me, like I said, that's where half our problems are. Yeah. Our social ills are based on the zero consequences.
Yes, there's zero consequences, but I think we should go on referendum on capital punishment as a country.
And corporal punishment.
And corporal punishment. Oh, that one, I'll be the first one to raise hands to say these kids must be beaten at school if they are misbehaving.
Mm.
And I said, but I look at the laws as well. I look at the case study that happened when South Africa in 1995 abolished this whole thing. You know, at that time, Fresh, they say 60% of crimes like murder and rape that required capital punishment, serious murder. 60% of them, they went and they didn't go through the whole process of arrest, prosecution, and conviction. 60%. Do you know where we are now? 6%. We only convict 6% of murders in this country. Now, are we saying if we bring back capital punishment, will it actually assist this? I don't think it will, because what is failing is the policing system, the court system, and the conviction process. That's where the problem lies. That's why car robbers, murderers, rapists are forever on the streets, because they find their way out through the system. And I think we must tighten, instead of killing people who do wrong, we must, you know, you can do a situation whereby killing a person does not inflict pain on that person. You are removing that person permanently from the society.
Which is
I prefer the Russian model, where they have a prison in Russia, and in that prison, instead of sending of hanging you or killing you, they say it's so much hell to be in that prison that you think twice before committing crimes, serious crimes like murder and things like that, whereby you are not allowed to see the sun, you don't have any rights, you are living in a 5x5 square meter. You know, room, your hands are forever tied, you are forever bent. That kind of will be much more of a deterrent to jail people. But you can go to South Africa, you can go to prison 25 years in terms of our constitution. So the problem is our systems, our laws, and the courts are blaming the police. Police do arrest people, but these people, they get away in court. Remember, the police work ends when they hand them over. And to come and testify in court. But the justice system says police are not trained enough. And this is another thing that I think we can do as a country. Let the police, in part of their training, that 6 months training, let them increase it and include criminal law justice process. Let the police know the criminal law. Because imagine you are expected to enforce the law that you don't know. You know, it's much of a problem. There are two acts of parliament that I think is the Criminal Procedure Act as well as the Police Act that I think every policeman must be fully trained and vested in implementing that.
Sure.
And I mean, look, the reports from Minister Bekicele to parliament last week that South Africa has spent 2.2 billion on unlawful arrest. 2.2 billion on unlawful arrest. I mean, you can see that the police don't know what they are doing. They don't know what they are supposed to be doing. But the levels of crime in the country, shame. It's one of the things, 30 years of democracy, if I get into politics, by the way, I've taken a decision last week, 2029, I'm going into politics. Actually, the next coming local elections, I'm going to contest as an independent, and 2029 as an independent. I've taken that decision. It's time now to get a country.
I'll be right behind you.
Yeah, no, I will.
There's something sexy about a Pan-Africanist Buddhist. running for office. So I will vote for you.
That combo, eh?
Absolutely.
Ah, thanks, my brother.
Speaking of elections, Mackenzie, Zilla, Ndlozi, Holomisa, they're busy.
It's busy. It's election time. That's our topic. The first one, it's let me start with General Bontolomisa. Did you hear the UDM took a decision that he's going to stand as a premier candidate for the Eastern Cape? Despite that, he's standing as a candidate nationally as well, but he's a premier candidate for the Eastern Cape. And I listened to his interview and I read the reasoning behind that. It is mainly based on what he did as a homeland leader. They say this guy did so well in the Eastern Cape, the then Transkei.
In the Transkei, yes.
Yes, so well that they think with the Eastern Cape, where everything has fallen apart in the Eastern Cape, I still have to find one thing that's working, except that it has beautiful beaches.
And December December there works.
It's
want to be there in December.
It's party, but nothing works in there. So they are saying they are putting Bantolomisa, which I think it's a good move for them.
Sure.
Because nationally he has been stable. They've been having that one or two seats. I think it may make a difference in the Eastern Cape. He can go back home. And also Bantolomisa has proved to be a kind of a political leader who has ethics. Most of the political corruption cases in the country, they were exposed by him or he follows up on them. And I think he will plow back home. I think it's a good move. But Helen Zille, she went into throat-on-throat with Gaten McKenzie regarding the case of actually Helen Zille thinks Gaten McKenzie may compromise this case of the kidnapped girl. I think it's Phillips or something like that, to say Gaten is involving himself too much on the case.
Jocelyn,
yes. Yeah. And in the middle of that, then Gaten with the collapsed building again in the Western Cape in George. And I don't know whether it's an unfortunate statement from Gaten. And me and you last week, we spoke about people saying good things with good intentions. But the men and the platform, they say, to say the government must not offer any counseling to the victims. You know, all the victims of the George.
Majority of the artisans.
Yes.
Are foreign nationals.
Foreign nationals from Mozambique, Malawi, and Gaten is saying they should get counseling from their countries or embassies. We must not help them. I disagree with him there. Humanitarian reasons are humanitarian reasons. What is the difference between those foreign nationals who have perished and some are injured and some have suffered compared to the foreign nationals from Botswana who were involved in a vehicle accident. We provided them with they were going to church. We provided them with counseling, provided them with healthcare. The government aided them. And I think these people were in South Africa, whether legally or illegally, and our laws permits that. You understand? Whether they were employed by that company illegally, it's something else that we should look into under the Immigration and the Police Act. But for humanitarian and social reasons, I think a human being who is under distress will need help, and I think they should get help. I don't think we should throw it. It's not there. And again, Fresh, you know, when somebody has died, it's not time to can throw bombs and guns to the family and to the wrongdoers. We must deal with the wrongdoers. They didn't do anything wrong. They are victims. They perish being victims. And the last one, Mr. Ndlozi, I don't know. You know, EFF leaders are, I don't know whether they're in conflict with each other or in conflict with their policies. Julius has been having nice teas with President Zuma and, you know, talking about cooperation and collaboration beyond 29. Then Ndlozi stands up and says, Zuma is old, he must retire, he must leave politics.
He must go home.
He must go home and rest because he's old. He's an ageist, we say. Look, I think personally, I think President Zuma is old, like many others. He's an elderly person, elderly statesman, who I think, I've always called him the mascot for MK, must not retire from politics because their wisdom is needed. The ANC went to call all these old people now to come and campaign.
The elders.
Yes. And I've said before, I don't think President Zuma wants to be active in politics to go to parliament. I've said it many times before.
He wants to upset the apple cart.
Yes.
And destabilize things a bit.
And then hand over to
he did in Nasrec, drop the mic again and walk off.
And Ndlozi says the old man must go home and retire. We need their wisdom as well. I mean, we have President Zuma holding the country hostage, whether right or wrong. We should be asking, what is it that this man knows that we don't know? How come one person can hold the whole nation hostage and getting judge presidents running up and down? And whether you hate him or not, for me, if a person can shake a nation, we should be learning something from that person that we must be doing.
Sure.
Our civil society movement, organization, or activists has died in South Africa. That's one of the things we need moving forward. We relied on politicians to can run our lives, even in local government. We should stop doing that. The people in the society, the civil society, must start rising and standing up. And those are some of the things we can learn from these old people, because they started as church leaders, some as civil society leaders. Then they graduate to become politicians, because to be a politician, you need to have fragile credentials. It's like a graduation. When you have arrived there,
If you are not in the trenches, you must wait your turn.
Trenches, yeah.
Wait at the back of the queue.
Of the queue, you know, yeah. So, I think this, but it's very interesting what is happening.
Sure. In closing, Israel versus South Africa, back again in court. What's going on?
Remember, this is an ongoing thing. Sure. Israel failed to adhere to the directives of the...
To exercise a caution of sorts.
Yes.
But they've never cared. Guys, Israel don't care. Israel are not about to go on they're not about to start caring. Last week, President Biden said, if you guys go into Rafah, you're not getting certain toys. They still went in because they don't care.
Yes.
When are you guys going to realize that they don't care?
What is interesting now with this case of Israel and South Africa back at the court now to force them to adhere to the court directive or order? Who's going to force them?
Yeah,
they're trying to get an order to force them. But the Muslim communities in the UK and the US and other countries, you know, they've stood up and approached courts in those countries, protested, they've approached the ICJ in support of South Africa. Strange enough, there are Jewish communities who stood up in those countries as well in support of South Africa to say, enough is enough. I've heard the president or the prime minister of Turkey saying, Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel is so evil that he will make who's the guy who killed the Jews, Hitler. So he'll make Hitler to be jealous the way he's murdering the children of Palestine. But fresh that in that instance, let me tell you, Israel doesn't care. They've reached a point of no return. There's no remorse. They will continue doing this until the Palestinians are diminished completely. And the world, the problem is the same world that is wanting to police and control Israel. It's the same world that armed Israel, that created Israel, that defended Israel. In the middle of this whole thing, do you know that Palestine is not a member of the United Nations? They are not recognized.
Absolutely.
Now, the UN body, which is talking of peace and security, has failed to recognize Palestine as a nation. Now, how do we expect the UN and its members, including South Africa, including the UK and the US, the same people that are saying, give Palestine their land, they are a human being.
We need a two-state solution.
But you're
denying one state.
But you're denying another state, the recognition. Only now they are going to the General Assembly to go and decide whether Palestine, only now. When half of Palestinians have been murdered over the years by the Israelis armed by the Americans, and why wouldn't the United Nations recognize Palestine as a nation?
Because America will veto it.
Yeah, but it's in the General Assembly. It doesn't go to the Security Council. It's in the General Assembly. That's why I'm questioning the conduct of these countries, including our own country, who are members of the General Assembly, who are supposed to vote that Palestine is recognized. And what is it that all these other people are sitting for in the UN when it's not benefiting African countries, for example, Latin American countries, and some of the Asian countries? When you look at countries like the Brunei and all that, the UN doesn't do anything. It's not even recognizing them. So for me, I think we are part, and that's why maybe we are feeling guilty to rush to court. We are part of the system that oppressed and destroyed Palestine. Because we belong to organizations internationally that has been silent and quiet and not doing anything. towards Palestine. And I've said before, you said on piece of paper from court, then what after?
Who's going to stop them?
Why are we not sending armed forces?
Who's going to send them?
Any of these countries that are saying they are pro-Palestine, not South Africa only.
They can't even endorse South Africa's stance at the court.
Those that are endorsing, many countries, and they are well-armed countries, China, Russia, and many other countries with good armies. Why don't we send our armed forces to go? If we really mean business, we have our armed forces sitting in the DRC, sitting in Central African Republic.
No one is even willing to send armies in to send aid.
To send food,
aid.
Yes, why don't we use our military to send aid to Palestine? And let's see if Israel will bomb South African jets sending aid into Palestine. Why are we not doing
that? They don't care. Butsang, on that note, where do we find you on social media?
Butsangm@gmail.com, 082-485-9100. I'm at Butsangm on social media handles. On a quick one.
Yes.
There's another case, International Court.
Sure.
Our Caster Semenya was in court this week.
Oh, yes.
To decide on humanitarian. And I think we should support Caster. I'm happy with the International Human Rights Court to stand up. You remember what happened the last time? 4 of the 3 judges ruled in her favor. Because what is happening, just quickly for the listener and the viewers, is that the Sports Appeal Court has ruled that Caster has an abnormal hormone. That testosterone is very high, that is making her to have an advantage over other female runners. And therefore, she must take a drug that will reduce
to
her testosterone.
Yes. Testosterone production.
I mean, what I like is the world has found that a testosterone level or whatever hormone, it's natural. Exactly. Now you want to put drugs in her to fight nature. What if
now she's doping?
Now she's doping. Yes, they actually want her to dope in order to reduce.
And if we want to talk about a natural advantage, then we might as well say if you're taller than 1.8, you must be in your own race. You mustn't race with other men.
With others, yes.
If you've got shorter legs, then you have an unfair disadvantage. You mustn't race with other men.
Then
we must start also measuring the balls of the runners. If you've got bigger balls, then you have more testosterone and you're therefore probably a better performer. Now we're going to start having balls Olympics.
Or maybe they will inhibit you. They're too heavy for you to run.
So let's get silly about it. Let's get silly about it.
Yes. Then. I hope this court rules in favor of Caster and she must go back to do what she does best.
Absolutely.
To run. But internationally, that's you know where we are. I nearly forgot that part.
Sure. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of #Politrix, #TheShowWithBalls. Coming to you from AMP Studios, we're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Pezulu Works, loving your cinematography. Otis the Flow Fraser, thank you for all of the imaging. Our guest, Botsang, Mr. Balls Muilwa. Creative producer, Kuvesh Mohan. Show producer, Keleso Mudisa King. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Till next week, have an incredible wow week in spite of yourselves.